Chapter 28. To the Tower of Genji. With night so near, they had no choice but to camp there on the mountain near the waygate, in two camps. Fael insisted on it.
That is done with,
Boyle told her in a displeased rumble.
We are out of the ways, and I have kept my oath. It is finished.
Fael put on one of her stubborn expressions, with chin up and fists on hips. Leave it alone, Loyal, Perrin said. I'll camp over there a bit. Loyal glanced at Fael, who had turned to the two Aiel women as soon as she heard Perrin agree, then shook his huge head and made as if to join Perrin in Gaul. Perrin motioned him back with a small gesture he hoped none of the women noticed. He made it a small bit, less than 20 paces. The waygate might be locked, but there were still the ravens and whatever they might presage. He wanted to be near if needed. If Fael complained, she could just complain. He was so set to ignore her protests that it irked him when she made none. Disregarding twinges from his leg and side, he unsaddled Stepper and unloaded the pack horse, hobbled both animals, and fitted them with nose bags with a few handfuls of barley and some oats. There was certainly no grazing up here. As to what there was, though, he strung his bow and laid it across his quiver near the fire, slipped the axe free of its belt loop. Gaul joined him in making a fire, and they had a meal of bread and cheese and dried beef, eaten in silence, and washed down with water. The sun slid behind the mountains, silhouetting the peaks and painting the undersides of the clouds red. Shadows blanketed the valley, and the air began to grow crisp. Dusting crumbs from his hands, Perrin dug his good green wool cloak out of his saddlebags. Perhaps he had grown more accustomed to Tyr's heat than he had thought. The women were certainly not eating in silence around their shadow-shrouded fire. He could hear them laughing, and the bits of what they said that he picked up made his ears burn. Women would talk about anything. They had no restraint at all. Loyal had moved as far away from them as he could and still be in the light, and was trying to bury himself in a book. They probably did not even realize they were embarrassing the Ogier. They probably thought they were talking quietly enough for Loyal not to hear. Muttering to himself, Perrin sat back across the fire from Gaul. The Aiel seemed to be taking no notice of the chill. Do you know any funny stories?
Funny stories? I cannot think of one offhand.
Gaul's eyes half turned to the other fire and the laughter.
I would if I could. The sun, remember?
Perrin laughed noisily and made his voice loud enough to carry.
I do. Women.
The hilarity in the other camp faded for a moment before rising again. That should show them. Other people could laugh. Perrin stared glumly into the fire. His wounds ached. After a moment, Gaul said, This place begins to look more like the threefold land than most of the wetlands. Too much water still, and the trees are still too big and too many. But it is not so strange as the places called forests. The soil was poor here, where Manetherin had died in fire. The widely scattered trees all stunted and thick-boled, odd wind-bent shapes, none as much as 30 feet high. Perrin thought it about as desolate a spot as he had ever seen.
I wish I could see your threefold land someday, Gaul.
Perhaps you will, when we are done here.
Perhaps. Not much chance of it, of course. None, really.
He could have told the Aielman that, but he did not want to talk of it now or think of it.
This is where Manetherin stood. You are of Manetherin's blood?
This was Manetherin, Perrin replied. And I suppose I am.
It was hard to believe that the small villages and quiet farms of the two rivers held the last of Manetherin's blood, but that was what Moraine had said. The old blood runs strong in the two rivers, she had said.
That was a long time ago, Gaul. We are farmers, shepherds, not a great nation, not great warriors.
Gaul smiled slightly.
If you say it, I have seen you dance the spears, and Randall Thor and the one called Matt. But if you say it...
Perrin shifted uncomfortably. How much had he changed since leaving home? Himself and Rand and Matt? Not his eyes and the wolves or Rand's channeling. He did not mean that. How much of what was inside remained unchanged? Matt was the only one who still seemed to be just himself, only more so.
You know about Manetherin?
We know more of your world than you think, and less than we believed. Long before I crossed the Dragon Wall, I had read books brought by peddlers. I knew of ships and rivers and forests, or thought I did.
Gaul made them sound like words in a strange tongue.
This is how I envisioned a forest.
He gestured at the sparse trees, dwarfed from the height they should have had.
To believe a thing is not to make it true. What do the Nightrunner and Leaf Blighters get? Do you believe it just coincidence they came near this waygate?
No, Perrin sighed. I saw ravens down the valley. Maybe that's all they were. But I don't want to take the chance, not after the Trollocs. Gaul nodded.
They could have been shadow eyes. If you plan for the worst, all surprises are pleasant.
I could do with a pleasant surprise.
Perrin felt for wolves again, and again found nothing.
I may be able to find out something tonight.
Maybe.
If anything happens here, you might have to kick me to wake me.
That sounded odd, he realized, but Gaul only nodded again.
Gaul, you've never mentioned my eyes, or even given them a second glance. None of the Aiel have.
He knew they were glowing golden now in the firelight.
The world is changing, Gaul said quietly. Ruark and Giron, my own clan chief. The wise ones, too. They tried to hide it, but they were uneasy when they sent us across the Dragon Wall searching for he who comes with the dawn. I think perhaps the change will not be what we have always believed. I do not know how it will be different, but it will be.
The Creator put us in the threefold land to shape us as well as to punish our sin. But for what have we been shaped?
He shook his head suddenly, ruefully.
Colinda, the wise one of the Hot Springs Hold, tells me I think too much for a stone dog. And Bear, the eldest wise one of the Sharad, threatens to send me to Roedion when Jiram dies, whether I want to go or not.
Beside all of that, Perrin, what does the color of a man's eyes matter?
I wish everybody thought that way.
The merriment had finally stopped at the other fire. One of the Aiel women, Perrin could not tell which, was taking the first watch, her back to the light, and everyone else had settled down for sleep. It had been a tiring day. Sleep should be easy to find, and the dream he needed.
He stretched out beside the fire, pulling his cloak around him.
Remember, kick me awake if need be.
Sleep enfolded him while Gaul was still nodding, and the dream came at once. It was daylight, and he stood alone near the waygate, which looked like an elegantly carved length of wall, incongruous on the mountainside. Except for that, there was no sign any human had ever set foot on that slope. The sky was bright and fine, and a soft breeze up the valley brought him the scent of deer and rabbits, quail and dove, a thousand distinct smells of water and earth and trees. This was the wolf dream. For a moment, the sense of being a wolf rolled over him. He had paws and... No. He ran his hands over himself, relieved to find only his own body, in his own coat and cloak. And the wide belt that normally held his axe, but with the hammer haft, thrust through the loop instead. He frowned at that, and surprisingly, for a moment, the axe flickered there instead, insubstantial and misty. Abruptly, it was the hammer again. Licking his lips, he hoped it stayed that way. The axe might be a better weapon, but he preferred the hammer. He could not remember anything like that happening before, something changing. But he knew little of this strange place, if it could be called a place. It was the wolf dream, and odd things happened there, surely as odd as in any ordinary dream. As though thinking of the oddities triggered one of them, a patch of sky against the mountains darkened suddenly, became a window to somewhere else. Rand stood amid swirling storm winds, laughing wildly, even madly, arms upraised, and on the winds rode small shapes, gold and scarlet, like the strange figure of the dragon banner. Hidden eyes watched Rand, and there was no telling whether he knew it. The odd window winked out, only to be replaced by another farther over, where Nynaeve and Elaine stalked cautiously through a demented landscape of twisted, shadowed buildings, hunting some dangerous beast. Perrin could not have said how he knew it was dangerous, but he did. That vanished, and another black blotch spread across the sky. Matt, standing where a road forked ahead of him. He flipped a coin, started down one branch, and suddenly was wearing a wide-brimmed hat and walking with a staff bearing a short sword blade. Another window, and Egwene and a woman with long white hair were staring at him in surprise while behind them the white tower crumbled stone by stone. Then they were gone too. Perrin drew a deep breath. He had seen the like before, here in the wolf dream, and he thought the sightings were real in some way, or meant something. Whatever they were, the wolves never saw them. Moraine had suggested that the wolf dream was the same as something called Tel Aaron Riad, and then would say no more. He had overheard Egwene and Elaine speaking of dreams once, but Egwene already knew too much about him and wolves, perhaps as much as Moraine. It was not something he could talk about, not even with her. There was only one person he could have talked to. He wished he could find Elias Machira, the man who had introduced him to the wolves. Elias had to know about these things. When he thought of the man, it seemed for a moment he heard his own name whispered faintly in the wind, but when he listened, there was only the wind. It was a lonely sound. Here, there was only himself.
Hopper,
he called, and in his mind,
Hopper.
The wolf was dead, and yet not dead here. The wolf dream was where wolves came when they died, to await being born again. It was more than that to wolves. They seemed in some way to be aware of the dream even while awake. One was almost as real, maybe as real, as the other to them.
Hopper! Hopper!
But Hopper did not come. This was all useless. He was there for a reason, and he might as well get on with it. At best, getting down to where he had seen the ravens rise would take hours. He took a step, the land around him blurred, and his foot came down near a narrow brook beneath stunted hemlock and mountain willow, with cloud-capped peaks towering above. For a moment, he stared in amazement. He was at the far end of the valley from the waygate. In fact, he was at the very spot he had been aiming for, the place where the ravens had come from, and the arrow that killed the first hawk. Such a thing had never happened to him before. Was he learning more of the wolf dream? Hopper had always said he was ignorant. Or was it different this time? He was more cautious with his next step, but it was only a step. There was no evidence of archer or ravens, no track, no feather, no scent. He was not sure what he had expected. There would be no sign unless they had been in the dream too, but if he could find wolves in the dream, they could help him find their brothers and sisters in the waking world, and those wolves could tell him if there were shadow spawn in the mountains. Perhaps if he were higher up, they could hear him call. Fixing his eye on the highest peak bordering the valley, just below the clouds, he stepped. The world blurred, and he was standing on the mountainside, with white billows not five spans overhead. In spite of himself, he laughed. This was fun. From here, he could see the entire valley stretched out below.
Hopper!
No answer. He leaped to the next mountain, calling, and the next, eastward toward the two rivers. Hopper did not answer. More troubling, Perrin did not sense any other wolves either. There were always wolves in the wolf dream. Always. From peak to peak, he sped in blurred motion, calling, seeking. The mountains lay empty beneath him, except for deer and other game. Yet there were occasional signs of men, ancient signs. Twice, great carved figures took nearly an entire mountainside. And in another place, strange angular letters 2 spans high had been incised across a cliff, a shade too smooth and sheer. Weathering had worn away the figures' faces, and eyes less sharp than his might have taken the letters themselves for the work of wind and rain. Mountains and cliffs gave way to the sand hills, great rolling mounds, sparsely covered with tough grass and stubborn bushes, once the shore of a great sea before the breaking. And suddenly, he saw another man, atop a sandy hill. The fellow was too distant to see clearly, just a tall, dark-haired man, but plainly not a Trolloc or anything of the sort, in a blue coat with a bow on his back, stooping over something on the ground hidden by the low brush. Yet there was something familiar about him. The wind rose and Perrin caught his smell faintly. A cold scent, that was the only way to describe it. Cold and not really human. Suddenly his own bow was in his hand, an arrow knocked, and the weight of a filled quiver tugged at his belt. The other man looked up, saw Perrin. For a heartbeat he hesitated, then turned and became a streak, slashing away across the hills. Perrin leaped down to where he had stood, stared at what had occupied the fellow, and without thought pursued, leaving the half-skinned corpse of a wolf behind. A dead wolf in the wolf dream. It was unthinkable. What could kill a wolf here? Something evil. His prey ran ahead of him in strides that covered miles, never more than barely in sight. Out of the hills and across the tangled Westwood with its wide scattered farms, over cleared farmland, a quilt of hedged fields and small thickets, and past Watch Hill. It was odd to see the thatched village houses covering the hill with no people in the streets, and farmhouses standing as if abandoned. But he kept his eye on the man fleeing ahead of him. He had become so used to this pursuit that he felt no surprise when one leaping stride put him down on the south bank of the River Tarrin, and the next amid barren hills without trees or grass. North and east he ran, over streams and roads and villages and rivers, intent only on the man ahead. The land grew flat and grassy, broken by scattered thickets, without any sign of man. Then something glittered ahead, sparkling in the sun. A tower of metal. His quarry sped straight for it and vanished. 2 leaps brought Perrin there as well. 200 feet the tower rose, and 40 thick, gleaming like burnished steel. It might as well have been a solid column of metal. Perrin walked around it twice without seeing any opening, not so much as a crack. Not even a mark on that smooth, sheer wall. The smell hung there, though, that cold, inhuman stink. The trail ended here. The man, if man he was, had gone inside somehow. He only had to find the way to follow. Stop. It was a raw flow of emotion that Perrin's mind put a word to. Stop. He turned as a great gray wolf, as tall as his waist, grizzled and scarred, alighted as if he had just leaped down from the sky. He might well have. Hopper had always envied eagles their ability to fly, and here he could too. Yellow eyes met yellow eyes. Why should I stop, Hopper? He killed a wolf. Men have killed wolves, and wolves men. Why does anger seize your throat like fire this time? I don't know, Perrin said slowly. Maybe because it was here. I didn't know it was possible to kill a wolf here. I thought wolves were safe in the dream. You chase Slayer, young bull. He is here in the flesh, and he can kill. In the flesh? You mean not just dreaming? How can he be here in the flesh? I do not know. It is a thing dimly remembered from long ago, come again as so much else. Things of the shadow walk in the dream now, creatures of Heartfang. There is no safety. Well, he's inside now. Perrin studied the featureless metal tower. If I can find how he got in, I can put an end to him. Cub foolish. Digging in a ground wasp's nest. This place is evil. All know this. And you would chase evil into evil. Slayer can kill. Perrin paused. There was a sense of finality to the emotions his mind attached the word kill to. Hopper, what happens to a wolf who dies in the dream? The wolf was silent for a time.
If we die here, we die forever, young bull. I do not know if the same is true for you, but I believe it is.
A dangerous place, Archer. The Tower of Genji is a bad place for humankind.
Perrin whirled, half raising his bow before he saw the woman standing a few paces away, her golden hair and a thick braid to her waist, almost the way women wore it in the Two Rivers, but more intricately woven. Her clothes were oddly cut, a short white coat and voluminous trousers of some thin, pale yellow material, gathered at the ankles above short boots. Her dark cloak seemed to hide something that glinted silver at her side. She shifted, and the metallic flicker vanished.
You have sharp eyes, Archer. I thought that the first time I saw you.
How long had she been watching? It was embarrassing that she had sneaked up without him hearing. At the least, Hopper should have warned him. The wolf was lying down in the knee-high grass, muzzle on his forepaws, watching him. The woman seemed vaguely familiar, though Perrin was certain he would have remembered her had he ever seen her before. Who was she, to be in the wolf dream? Or was it Moraine's Teleron Riad too? Are you Aes Sedai?
No, Archer, she laughed. I only came to warn you, despite the prescripts. Once entered, the Tower of Genji is hard enough to leave in the world of men. Here it is all but impossible.
You have a bannerman's courage, which some say cannot be told from foolhardiness.
Impossible to leave? The fellow, Slayer, surely had gone in.
Why would he do that if he could not leave?
Hopper said it's dangerous, too.
The Tower of Genji? What is it?
Her eyes widened, and she glanced at Hopper, who still lay stretched out on the grass, ignoring her and watching Perrin.
You can talk to wolves.
Now that is a thing long lost in legend.
So that is how you are here. I should have known.
The tower? It is a doorway, Archer, to the realms of the Aelfin and the Eelfin. She said the names as if he should recognize them. When he looked at her blankly, she said,
Did you ever play the game called Snakes and Foxes?
All children do. At least they do in the Two Rivers. But they give it up when they get old enough to realize there's no way to win.
Except to break the rules, she said. Courage to strengthen, fire to blind, music to daze, iron to bind.
That's a line from the game. I don't understand. What does it have to do with this tower?
Those are the ways to win against the snakes and the foxes. The game is a remembrance of old dealings. It does not matter so long as you stay away from the Aelfin and the Eelfin. They are not evil the way the shadow is evil, yet they are so different from humankind, they might as well be. They are not to be trusted, Archer. Stay clear of the Tower of Genji. Avoid the world of dreams if you can. Dark things walk.
Like the man I was chasing, Slayer?
A good name for him. This Slayer is not old, Archer, but his evil is ancient.
She almost appeared to be leaning slightly on something invisible, perhaps that silver thing he had never quite seen.
I seem to be telling you a great deal. I do not understand why I spoke in the first place.
Of course.
Are you Taviran, Archer?
Who are you?
She seemed to know a lot about the tower and the wolf dream. But she was surprised I could talk to Hopper.
I've met you before somewhere, I think. I have broken too many of the prescripts already, Archer.
Prescripts? What prescripts? A shadow fell on the ground behind Hopper, and Perrin turned quickly, angry at being caught by surprise again. There was no one there, but he had seen it. The shadow of a man with the hilts of two swords rising above his shoulders. Something about that image teased his memory.
He is right, the woman said behind him. I should not be talking to you.
When he turned back, she was gone. As far as he could see, were only grassland and scattered thickets, and the gleaming silvery tower. He frowned at Hopper, who finally lifted his head from his paws.
It's a wonder you aren't attacked by chipmunks, Perrin muttered. What did you make of her?
Her? A she?
Hopper stood, looking around.
Where?
I was talking to her, right here, just now.
You made noises at the wind, young bull. There was no she here, none but you and I.
Perrin scratched his beard irritably. She had been there. He had not been talking to himself.
Strange things can happen here, he told himself. She agreed with you, Hopper. She told me to stay away from this tower.
She is wise.
There was an element of doubt in the thought. Hopper still did not believe there had been any she.
I've come awfully far afield for what I intended, Perrin muttered.
He explained his need to find wolves in the two rivers, or the mountains above. Explained about the ravens and the trollocs in the ways. When he was done, Hopper remained silent for a long time, his bushy tail held low and stiff. Finally,
avoid your old home, young bull.
The image Perrin's mind called home was of the land marked by a wolf pack.
There are no wolves there now. Those who were and did not flee are dead. Slayer walks the dream there.
I have to go home, Hopper. I have to.
Take care, young bull. The day of the last hunt draws near. We will run together in the last hunt.
We will, Perrin said sadly.
It would be nice if he could come here when he died. He was half-wolf already, it seemed, sometimes.
I have to go now, Hopper.
May you know good hunting, young bull, and she's to give you many cubs.
Goodbye, Hopper.
He opened his eyes to the dim light of dying coals on the mountainside. Gaul was squatting, just beyond the edge of the light, watching the night. In the other camp, Fael was up, taking her turn at guard. The moon hung above the mountains, turning the clouds to pearly shadows. Perrin estimated he had been asleep 2 hours.
I'll keep guard a while, he said, tossing off his cloak.
Gaul nodded and settled himself on the ground where he was.
Gaul?
The Aiel raised his head.
It may be worse in the two rivers than I thought.
Things often are, Gaul replied quietly.
It is the way of life.
The Aielman calmly put his head down for sleep.
Slayer. Who was he? What was he?
Shadow spawn at the waygate, ravens in the mountains of mist, and this man called Slayer in the two rivers.
It could not be coincidence, however much he wished it.